This is VOA News. I'm Steve Norman. Turkey's finance minister says his government has prepared an action plan aimed at easing market concerns that they have led to a slump in the value of the nation's currency, the lira. Turkey was hit by a financial shockwave this past week as the lira nosedived 14% over concerns about the government's economic policies and a trade and diplomatic dispute with the U.S. Middle East Institute scholar Zubair Iqbal tells VOA Turkey has been having economic problems for months.
In the case of Turkey, things had started to go wrong in the very early stages of 2018. The economy is heavily dependent on foreign capital. And that foreign capital is now has to be repaid. The current account deficit is quite large. And with the pressure on the lira, there has been a tendency to walk away from lira, which complicates matters in the sense that now Turkey will have even less resources available to repay.
Turkey's President Recep Tayyip Erdogan warns of drastic measures if businesses withdraw currency, foreign currency that is, from banks. So far, the lira's value has fallen more than 40% since the start of the year. Sporadic clashes continue for the control of Afghanistan's southeastern city of Ghazni amid conflicting claims about whether the government or the Taliban insurgency control key installations. President Ashraf Ghani, late on Sunday, chaired an emergency meeting of top security and intelligence officials to take stock of the situation. Voters in Mali went to the polls on Sunday for a runoff election to determine if incumbent Ibrahim Boubacar Keita will be remaining in office. He faced off against opposition leader Soumaila Cisse. The polls had low voter turnout by closing amid attacks and threats of violence. This is VOA News. An explosion at a building thought to be used by arms dealers killed at least 42 people, including 12 children, in Syria's rebel-held Idlib province. Meantime, Jan Egeland, senior advisor to the UN Special Envoy for Syria, warns everyone will be trapped in Idlib because there is nowhere else to go.
This area is screaming for diplomatic solutions. It's yearning for the best diplomats, the best military negotiators to sit down between each other and come to agreements, knowing that there wouldn't be another Idlib to be evacuated to.
Egeland agrees that among the many armed groups in Idlib, there are a number of people designated as terrorists by many countries and the UN, but he notes they constitute a small minority. He says it would be indefensible to threaten the lives of hundreds of thousands of women, children, and others in the name of fighting terrorism. Thousands of people in Romania were out on the streets protesting and demanding the resignation of the government, while the ruling Socialist Democratic Party. Protesters waving Romanian flags as well as NATO and European Union flags gathered in the square outside the government offices, where clashes with riot police left more than 500 seeking medical treatment. Critics of the government say Romania has lost ground in fighting corruption since the Social Democrats won in 2016. Here in the U.S., anti-racist protests far outnumber the handful of white supremacists who rallied across the street from the White House on Sunday. Police tried to prevent a repeat of last year's white nationalist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, which exploded into violence. A self-confessed white supremacist is accused of running over and killing a 32-year-old counter-protester. Robert Janet was one of Sunday's counter-protesters.
I need to stand up. Stand up against hate. Stand up against white supremacy. Stand up against the forces that would take us back to a very, very dark place. There's no place for that here.
The organizers of Sunday rally, John Kessler, says the rights movement cannot be associated with hate, violence, and oppression.
Regardless of whether people think I'm a jerk or I'm a racist or whatever, just understand that I have rights.
President Trump issued a plea for unity on Twitter saying, and I quote, "We must come together as a nation." And he said that he condemned all types of racism and acts of violence. And he concluded his tweet with, "Peace to all Americans." Get more news at our website. You can find us at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. I'm Steve Norman, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, August 13th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is asking the court to dismiss the challenge to the election results.
It's very clear that the papers are supposed to be sent at the correct address, but that is the wrong address that was used, because that was not the address that Mnangagwa gave to ZEC. So they're supposed to use the correct address, that is Sherwood Farm.
Believe Gaula is a central committee member of ZANU-PF, but the opposition MDC alliance says President Mnangagwa is afraid of the truth. Zimbabwe criticizes the renewal of U.S. sanctions. The people of Mali are awaiting Sunday's election results, and who killed Chief Ital Esso on Sunday in English-speaking Cameroon.
The interim government of Mbazonia does not condone the arrest and assassination of people who are English-speaking. Every form of extrajudicial killing has come from the government terrorist soldiers.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonian Separatist Movement. We'll also hear the views of the government. And Liberians in the diaspora hope their legislature will this week vote in favor of dual citizenship. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is today, Monday, expected to file opposing papers at the Constitutional Court against a petition by the Movement for Democratic Change MDC Alliance presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa last Friday, challenging incumbent President Emmerson Mnangagwa's victory in the July 30th poll. ZANU-PF Central Committee member Believe Gaule says the case should be dismissed because the MDC alliance did not follow court regulations.
I think it's very clear that the papers are supposed to be sent at the correct address, but that is the wrong address that was used, because that was not the address that Mnangagwa gave to ZEC. So they're supposed to use the correct address, that is Sherwood Farm. That's where the papers were supposed to be sent.
Is it not a question of ZANU-PF getting scared here, Mr. Kaule?
Not at all. Not at all. We are not moved even an inch. We have a team of experienced lawyers, headed by experienced lawyers like Chinamasa, Paul Mangwana. Remember, Paul Mangwana, those guys, they are the ones who crafted the constitution of this country. We are not worried at all. And it's a matter of time, Gibbs. We are just praying all things are going to be all right.
And people are saying that since you've got about 12 lawyers, it means that this issue is very serious. And at the moment, ZANU-PF is developing some cold feet over it. What's your take on that?
You know, we mustn't take things lightly as a party, because to me, they are more political than whatever. But what I feel is that we mustn't take things lightly. That is why we assembled a very strong team to defend our party.
And of course, you may favor a positive outcome for the ruling party. But what will happen if it doesn't go that way?
No, we are going to accept the outcome anyway. That is the rule of law. We are going to accept whatever the outcome will be.
And are ZANU-PF activists or supporters ready for a presidential rerun?
We are ready for anything, depending on the decision that is going to be taken by the court. We are prepared for anything, very much prepared.
Believe Gaule is a central committee member of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party. He spoke from Bulawayo with reporter Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe's service. Meanwhile, Nkululeko Sibana, spokesperson for MDC Alliance leader Nelson Chamisa, says the ruling ZANU-PF is afraid of the truth.
The papers were supposed to be delivered to President Mnangagwa, and the papers were sent to him to an address that he frequents. It was a working day. He was expected to be at work. For that reason, really, I don't know what they're attempting to do. Papers are not supposed to be saved to an address. They're supposed to be saved to a person. And that person received the papers, and that is exactly what matters. Everything else is clutching on straws. They are desperate. They are afraid that the evidence is speaking for itself, and they cannot defend. I think that they must defend and stop playing around with the Zimbabweans and their minds.
And there are some legal experts who are saying that maybe the case may be dismissed on that technicality. If that happens, what's your next step?
Look, clear clearly that is their desire. They are looking for technicalities. They don't want to defend because they can't defend. They are looking to create technicalities. Unfortunately, this technicality doesn't work. I spoke to the president-elect lawyer this morning, and he looked at the matter and said, look, as far as he's concerned, the papers are supposed to be served to President Edim Nangagwa, and we have a reasonable basis to suspect that he was at work because he works in that building. And for that reason, the service is not avoidable.
Of course, we know that your favorable outcome should be positive as far as you're concerned. But what will happen if the outcome is negative?
Well, look, there is no way that the outcome is going to be negative because it is not anyone's wish that is going to be the outcome of the court. It is what the evidence says. The truth speaks for itself. And what the court is going to do is look at the evidence and make a determination based on the evidence. We are very clear that President Nelson Chamisa believes that the evidence is incontrovertible.
Nkululeko Sibanda, a spokesman for MDC Alliance leader Nelson Chamisa, he spoke from Harare with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Zimbabwe's government says the recent renewal of sanctions imposed on the country by the U.S. government is going to further strain the Southern African nation's ailing economy. Columbus Mayavunga reports for VOA from Harare.
President Donald Trump last week signed the Zimbabwe Democracy and Economic Recovery Amendment Act of 2018, also known as ZIDERA. Zimbabwe's Foreign Affairs Minister Sibusiso Moyo lamented the move.
Commerce between the two states remains hampered by non-existent bank-to-bank relations. Even the amended ZIDERA Act now acknowledges the economic reforms being achieved by this government, as well the bills noting that the country has paid its debt arrears to the IMF, and calls further for re-engagement in this area in order to conclude other areas. Both the U.S. companies and foreign companies, as well as individuals from Zimbabwe, are subject to penalties. It cannot therefore be naively claimed that ZIDERA is targeted at few individuals and does not affect trade and investment between the U.S. and Zimbabwe, as the international media sometimes has painted it.
The United States and most Western countries introduced sanctions on Zimbabwe's leadership following reports of election rigging and human rights abuses in 2002 when Robert Mugabe was in power. ZIDERA set forth steps Zimbabwe needed to take to have sanctions removed, including ensuring last month's election was free and fair. When Mugabe's successor came into power last November, President Emmerson Mnangagwa promised to normalize relations with the West by addressing the issues the West had raised. Moyo on Sunday said Mnangagwa's government had been shocked by the renewal of the sanctions.
We don't require any form of restrictive measures around our necks at all as the people of Zimbabwe. But we appreciate that there was a ZIDERA Act, and its process of unshackling it is also a process and cannot be an event, and that we appreciate. We have been engaging the U.S. government, the U.S. Congress in this aspect, and we believe that a lot of some of the issues which are contained in the amended act are already or have already been implemented.
The former army general gave examples of the restoration of the rule of law, credible election, military neutrality in civilian matters, and inviting international observers to the July 2018 general election. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, August 13th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 minutes past the hour. Vote counting has started in Sunday's Mali presidential runoff election between incumbent Ibrahim Boubacar Keita and former finance minister Soumaila Cisse. One report said a polling station chief was killed by suspected jihadists in the north of the country. The third and fourth place finishers did not endorse Keita or challenger Sisi. Instead, they told their supporters to vote their conscience. But Yair Samaki, leader of the Party for Civic and Patriotic Action, known as the PACP, and a former Malian ambassador, declared his support for President Keita on Friday. Samaki says Sunday's voting went well.
Voting went well. As far as my hometown is concerned, is where I came to vote, and everything went well. All the voting booths opened on time, and the process was very smooth. No major incident has been registered anywhere in the city of Welesebugu.
As you know, in the first round, there was this allegation that violence and all that, and maybe fraud. What did you observe, and what are you hearing from observers?
Observers seem to agree that the process has been relatively fair and acceptable. And I wish that Malians will come to a peaceful conclusion of this process. Conflict arises in any country. The way we deal with them sets us apart. And I think that we will be able to set ourselves apart above any challenges that we may face, that we can resolve all our differences in a lawful manner.
When would the Malian people know the final results?
The Constitutional Court has about 72 hours to 5 days, actually, to proclaim the provisory result from the Ministry of Territorial Administration. And those results will be officialized by the Constitutional Court.
You were to hold a news conference on Friday to talk about whether you would be supporting a candidate or not. What was the outcome of the news conference?
At the conclusion of the meeting, we threw our support behind the current president, Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. This was a unanimous decision of the party leaders, including myself, and we believe that he will be the best man to lead the country, and that's where our support is.
You are a former ambassador, am I right?
I am. I'm a former ambassador of President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita. I was serving in India for 2.5 years, where I resigned to come contest.
Why did you choose to run in the first round instead of just supporting the president?
I had a plan, and we wanted to propose an audacious plan for peace, stability, and prosperity in Mali. And we proposed this to the people of Mali, and they were not ready for the change that we were proposing. And they went for the current president, who received 41% of the votes in the first round.
So thank you very much.
It's a great pleasure.
Yair Samaki is the leader of the Party for Civic and Patriotic Action in Mali. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bamako. Liberia's national legislature returns to work this week from their annual recess, and among the bills they are expected to consider is the Alien and Nationality Law. The bill seeks dual citizenship for Liberians born in Liberia but are now living outside the country along with their families. Emmanuel Wetti is chair of the All Liberia Conference on Dual Citizenship, a coalition of Liberia diaspora groups. He says they are confident the bill will pass because President George Weah has invested his political capital in the passage.
We believe that with dual citizenship, economic development in Liberia can be faster, and Liberians from the diaspora can fully participate in the overall development of the country.
Mr. Wetti, as you know, the argument for dual citizenship, this is not the first time. What is different now?
Well, what is different now is that we do have Senator Vani Shema from Kidman County. He has introduced a bill to the Liberian Senate, and it is our belief that I understand that the bill will be discussed when the Senate returns to session on the 14th of this month. What is also different is that we have President Weah, who have in January that he supports dual citizenship, and he's willing to invest his political capital in this endeavor.
Is this dual citizenship for all Liberians living outside of Liberia, or is there a distinction?
Thank you very much. We are advocating for dual citizenship for natural-born Liberians and dual-born of Liberian parents. Our advocacy is not citizenship for non-Negro. We're not advocating that whites should become citizens. We are advocating that natural-born Liberians who are naturalized in another country or who have born their kids in another country should be citizens of Liberia. They shouldn't be denied a citizenship. Because what happened is that the Alien and Nationality Law of Liberia says that if you naturalize in another country, you are not a Liberian.
You know, on the ground in Liberia, there have been some resistance. And you, the Union of Liberian Associations, I think you have a reputation. People say that some of you just want to go home and get jobs. And when there are no jobs, you leave. Is this a matter of making it possible for your people to go home and get jobs?
No, this is not about job hunting. This is about all Liberians getting on the table and being involved in the development of the country. It's not about job hunting. Our sole purpose is about connection. Our sole purpose is replacing drain to brain gain. And our sole purpose is to make sure that we have land ownership. What is very important to note here is that currently, if you naturalize in another country, you are not a Liberian and you can't own the land. And that's a very key thing, that those Liberians that are naturalized in another country do not own the land. So if you had a land in Liberia before, and you came to the United States or Australia or somewhere in Europe and you naturalize, you are not a Liberian, because the Liberian Constitution says only a Liberian can own the land. So this is not about jobs. This is about us going back home and participating in the full process of redeveloping our country.
And so you are hopeful that this bill has a chance of passing?
Yes, from all indication, we are very hopeful that the bill will pass in the Senate. It's my understanding that President Weah will be investing his political capital in this endeavor, and we hope that we will have the bill passed in the Senate.
Thank you very much. So nice to talk with you on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you very much, James.
Emmanuel Wetti is chair of the All-Liberia Conference on Dual Citizenship, a coalition of Liberia diaspora groups. He was speaking with me from Columbus, Ohio. Cameroon's government is blaming the secessionist movement in the country's English-speaking region for the killing Sunday of a traditional ruler. Chief Etor Issao was reportedly killed Sunday morning just as he stepped out of church. His killers fled. Chief Issao is the latest in a series of atrocities targeted at traditional rulers in Cameroon's northwest and southwest regions. Minister of Information Issa Chiroma Bakari says the so-called Ambazonia separatist movement seeking an independent English-speaking Cameroon is to blame for the chief's killing.
The information was brought to my knowledge in the early hours of the day. It is said that he was attending the ceremony in a church when they dragged him out and gruesomely assassinated him. The situation unbearable has been perpetrated, there is no doubt, by the secessionists who are not happy with whoever is a law-abiding person, whoever respects law and constitution of the nation. And this is the case of all traditional rulers who are the representatives of the government, and their responsibility is to convey the message to their population in order to enable them to be aware of what is taking in the nation. This is their role, and the secessionists bully them, threaten them in case they do not disapprove and distance themselves from the government. Allegedly, for that reason, he has been gruesomely assaulted. There is no doubt that this is the making of secessionists.
Mr. Minister, Amnesty International is accusing your government of shooting unarmed people. The Amnesty claimed that it is shown in a video. Is this the work of your government?
On behalf of the government, I say that adamantly we reject such a libelous or slanderous accusation. This aims just to defame, to put disreputation on our army. As far as the government is concerned, the head of state has instructed the Ministry of Defense to put in place a sizable team of experts in order to deny to analyze this video, in order to establish beyond all reasonable doubt that this is the deed of our military, or to the contrary, our army has nothing to do with this event. The reason why I said that on behalf of the government, I reject it, but an investigation is about to take place. At the end of it, the result will be brought to the knowledge of the press.
Issa Chiroma Bakari is Cameroon's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Yaoundé. But the Ambazonia separatist movement says it does not condone the arrest and assassination of English-speaking Cameroonians. Chris Anu, Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia separatist movement, says all forms of extrajudicial killings since the movement began has been carried out by the Cameroonian army.
We have learned of the assassination of the traditional ruler. However, our organization, the interim government of Ambazonia, does not condone the arrest and assassination of people who are English-speaking. Every form of extrajudicial killing in this revolution has come from the government terrorist soldiers. If you are online, you will have seen that the social media run by Ambazonians and Cameroonians is filtered with daily assassinations by Cameroon soldiers against unarmed people in the southern Cameroon. So no, we are not. Our people, our boys are not responsible for the killing of this traditional ruler. It is.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the Ambazonia Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin in Lagos, where Nigeria's Aaron Akwadri made history on Sunday at Table Tennis Federation Challenge Nigerian Open. Aaron Akwadri beat Frenchman Anton Hetchard 4-2 in the final of the men's single in front of a capacity crowd at the stadium. Aaron Akwadri received a star prize of $5,000 and a side bonus of $3,500 from the Lagos State Governor Akinwumi Ambode as the best Nigerian player in the competition.
I can say that I have played in several tournaments, and the more I play, the more I get better. It has always not been easy, but I must say the tournament I've been playing give me some kind of experience and opportunity. Even when I was losing, I kept going and going. And this amazing crowd, they supported me a lot.
Elsewhere in South Africa, Egypt's Farida Mohammed has won the South African Open Squash Championship in Pretoria. Farida Mohammed dominated in the All Egyptian Women's Final, where she comprehensively defeated her fellow countrywoman, Mena Nasir. In rugby news, Kenya Simbas have closed the gap on table leaders Namibia after humbling Tunisia. In rugby news, Kenya Simbas have closed the gap on table leaders Namibia after humbling Tunisia 67-0 in the Rugby African Gold Cup 2019 World Cup qualifier played in Nairobi on Saturday. It was a convincing win for the Kenyan team as they picked up their first bonus point in the competition. Kenya captain Davis Chenge and head coach Ian Snook are already looking forward to their next clash.
Opportunity for us to change the first flag in Kenya, and you know it's a big honor bestowed upon us by Kenya.
Our goal is to obviously get straight through. It always has been. If we have to go to the repechage, then we'll face that problem when we come to it.
Staying with rugby news, Uganda's Rugby Cranes defeated Morocco 40-29 on Saturday to pick their second African Gold Cup win as the continent's sides battle for a spot at the 2019 World Cup. Finally, in women's football news, Ghana left it late to defeat New Zealand 1-0 in their final Group A match at the FIFA Under 20 Women's World Cup France 2018 on Sunday afternoon. Later today, Nigerian 20 team, the Falconets, will face China in a potentially explosive encounter to end a place in the 9th FIFA Under 20 Women's World Cup quarterfinals. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Vote counting has started in Sunday's Mali presidential runoff election between incumbent Ibrahim Boubacar Keita and former finance minister Soumaila Cisse. One report said a polling station chief was killed by suspected jihadists in the north of the country. And Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF party is today, Monday, expected to file opposing papers at the Constitutional Court against a petition by the Movement for Democratic Change. That is it for this Monday, August 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very, very productive week.
I'm Lino Armando, host of Health Chat. Next week on Health Chat, we will discuss acne. a condition where all glands of the skin become clogged, forming spots, pimples, and sometimes cysts. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The U.S. country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. Health Chat, this Tuesday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.